Support for this podcast comes from the UTSA Institute of Texan Cultures. For more than 50 years, the museum has told stories of Texas history and heritage from diverse cultures that define the state's unique character. Details at texancultures.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Nearly 400 children and youth are available for adoption in Bexar County. Placement into a caring home can have a significant positive impact on the life of a young person who has been in the foster care system. What questions do you have about becoming an adopting parent in general or adopting from foster care specifically? What criteria must be met? What steps can you take to prepare? We're joined the rest of the hour with Anais Vieira, Chief Public Relations Officer with the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. Kristen Berry is a co-host of the Honestly Adoption podcast and co-author of Honestly Adoption, Answering 101 Questions About Adoption and Foster Care. And Nikki Spencer is a care manager with Chosen Care, which provides home-based services for adoptive families. The number to call in if you've got a question or comment about becoming an adoptive parent, the number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. And Anais, tell me about the children. We have 400 children. Is that a high number, low number? Has that changed a lot?
Well, as of October 31st, we had 384 children legally free for adoption in Bexar County. Bexar County, the city of San Antonio, is the seventh largest city in the United States, and its child population is about a little more than 509,000. So you're looking at children who are not in their permanent home and who are looking for forever families. And so that's a number that we know that 384 children, those are 384 lives that can be transformed by somebody who says, yes, I've thought about adoption for a number of years or a number of months, and I'm ready to take action on the next steps. But again, those are 384 lives.
And Kristen Berry, Honestly Adoption podcast. What kind of questions, are there a population of potential adoption parents out there, yet they have a lot of questions? So are parents are their main questions about their own ability or about whether or not they would actually be allowed to adopt, or about, what happens if I adopt a child and they turn out to be somebody who's going to be someone who demands a lot of care, a lot of attention? And so how do you handle those types of questions?
I think that we can be equipped and we can do a very good job. But we need to address those questions head on. Don't go into it blindly. Ask what you need to know. Can I make my home safe? How can I help this child adjust or to deal with their trauma? And there really are some answers to that.
Right. So getting into the nitty gritty and having realistic expectations, we can do that. But also, while we have this conversation, I don't want to try and stir up a lot of like horror stories and worst case scenarios. And so let me go to Nikki Spencer, care manager with Chosen Care. And I understand that you are an adoptive parent as well.
Yes, that is correct.
And so did you have questions? What was the algorithm did you run in your head when you were trying to figure out this was right for you?
I think it was definitely, am I equipped to be able to do this? And can I face kind of the unknown? There's a lot of friends that I had that had, a lot of stuff that they carried a baby in their belly and they'd been preparing for it for a long time and they'd had other kids and a big community of support of people had done it. And when I tried to kind of talk to other people about going into this space of adopting or fostering, there's just not very many people who have done it or that talk about it a lot of times. So I think just that fear of kind of the unknown and some of the stories that you do hear about the trauma and the really difficult histories and some of the things that can be difficult to handle, kind of the unknown when you're going into it.
Right. So, Anais, the children have gone through the foster care system.
Absolutely.
Typically. And even if a judge has ruled that this system is damages children and they're going to come out with some level of PTSD, right?
Yeah, you know, they come out with trauma because, one, they've already been removed from their biological home. So that's traumatic in and of itself. And so having that removal from their family is traumatic. And then being able to prepare them for the next chapter in their life. I mean, it's kind of a day by day of how do we help children adjust to what they're experiencing right now. And to be very mindful of the words that we use, how we engage with children and young people, and how are we able to go ahead and make them feel safe? We always talk about, and I'm sure Nikki can probably attest to this, is the emotional felt safety that children feel and the physical felt safety of children and how they feel. Because again, we might think that their behavior is, oh my God, that's not rational. But for them it is, because it might be survival. And we have to be very real, because their traumas that they've experienced are real. And we need to be able to be mindful of how do we connect with them, attachments, relationships.
And so Nikki Spencer, talk about how do you establish that felt safety. What does that mean, felt safety?
So the felt safety can be, we know, and when the children come into the homes, we know that they're coming into a safe home because they've been vetted and they've been licensed with the state, the people have had training, they've been deemed a safe environment. That just because that we know it's safe doesn't mean when the child comes in that they're automatically feeling like it's a safe placement. Like Ani-E said, they've been living a lot of different places, and they've had a lot of people that have let them down or disappointed them, and they haven't learned the same thing about how to trust adults. They've come from a completely different background. So they may be coming into a safe environment, but them being able to feel like they're safe and know they're safe and receiving that nurturing and care just takes a completely different kind of parenting and approach than what traditionally you may see.
So providing, not just providing a stable home, but somehow communicating to the child that this place is here for you and it's forever. Kristen Berry, is that how that works?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we think of children as being resilient, and resilient is that ability to bounce back. But resiliency is built through attachments over time. So building up those attachments means consistency. It means showing that felt safety. We know that our kids don't just bounce back on their own. That attachment's been damaged before. And so the way that that attachment can be healed is through trusting relationships. And the way we build trusting relationships is just with patience and consistency and time.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980 with Michael. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you. I'm just wondering, the children come into the system in some kind of a trauma, experiencing some kind of trauma. What is being done in the system now before they get adopted, that either in therapy or programs that they get involved in?
All right, Michael, thank you for that great question. Ani-E, as children exit the foster care system, I mean, when they're in the system, and I know over at the Children's Shelter of San Antonio, where you are the public relations officer, they're being given therapy and counseling there.
Sure.
So does that prepare them for adoption?
Yeah. So let me give you an example. So when children are placed in, for example, our emergency shelter, we have the Harvey E. Najm Hope Center. And so we provide therapy for children as young as 3 to 17 through trauma-focused cognitive behavioral therapy and trust-based relational interventions. So these mental health interventions to help them start the healing process. Because again, you know, they're trying to understand the environment that they're currently in. And how do we get them to a space of when children are going to either be placed with family, such as relatives, and maybe they will be adopted by their relatives later on, or maybe they go to a foster to adoptive home. So there are therapeutic services available for those children so that they can be able to start the healing process, because we want to mitigate those traumatic experiences and the symptoms that they're going to be experiencing, and understanding where their hurts are coming from and getting to the root cause.
And so do the children, are they participating in the adoption process so that they feel like they aren't just a commodity being handed off to someone else, but they are, they have some agency in what is going on?
Absolutely. So when you are able, like, for example, Chosen Care, and Nikki can probably speak a little bit greater about that as a foster to adoptive parent, but also recognizing that children have a voice. I think that's critical of being able to engage youth, to ask them, what are they looking even in parents? You know, what do they want in a family? That's important to give children choices.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so Kristen Berry with the Honestly Adoption podcast. Now, I'm sure you came to this podcast, honestly. You must have some personal experience here.
I do. So I'm an adoptive mom, a former foster mom. I'm an adoptive big sister. I am the granddaughter of two adoptees. I am the cousin of an adoptee. And so that was just kind of surrounded our life. And we began writing, we write at Confessions of an Adoptive Parent. And then our podcast is Honestly Adoption. Really, that's just a parent's perspective trying to share with other parents. Because what we realized is that when our perspective changes, when we understand more about what's going on with our children, we just do a better job as parents.
So Kristen, do you think that there are some myths or misconceptions that are holding back potential adoptive parents from getting involved here?
Definitely. I mean, I think you just mentioned the horror stories or, you know, and people kind of go to the darkest place sometimes. I think that holds people back. And the real truth is that behavior is always a voice. Behavior is telling us something. So if a child has a behavior that we deem negative, let's even just say like food hoarding. If that child has a behavior that looks greedy, they're taking too much, they're stuffing something in their pocket, they're hiding something under their bed, that feels like a negative behavior when we've been raised in a traditional household and we've had safety. But if we can remember that that behavior is a voice, often it is pointing back to something that, while hiding food under our bed doesn't seem reasonable to me, when I understand that maybe my child was malnourished, suddenly stuffing extra food in your pocket really makes a lot of sense. So, you know, I would say just that understanding that that behavior is a voice, it helps us to piece together what may have happened and then prepare ourselves better.
So a child may have gone through a foster care environment where there may not have been enough food to go around, or food may have been withheld as some form of punishment, but now they're in a different environment and just sitting down and saying that's not going to happen here, that may not be good enough because we're dealing with deep-seated behavior and a child who is still dealing with things in a very basic level. So Nikki Spencer, how does anyone come to try to deal with that, or do you just decide this is something that will resolve itself eventually and just not get fixated on something that may or may not be, you know, that negative?
So I think there's definitely potential for things to get resolved, but I won't get resolved without the parents really understanding the behavior and where it stems from and being able to help the children. So the food issues, particularly just understanding those within what that looks like that the kids need throughout the day and even within the school day of when they might need food every 2 hours, just to know of the comfort of knowing that something is there. Because their brains are wired a little bit differently because they've had different experiences. And so I think that's one of the things that we see too with families is that there's an expectation of this child's in my home. I'm giving them a safe environment. I'm giving them food as often as they want and as they need. Why am I still seeing some of these behaviors that I don't understand? And it's coming back to having the parents really understand the voice of the child and what they're trying to express. I think another difficult thing can be for some of the kids that are older, developmentally or emotionally, they're typically at about half of the age that they are at. So, for instance, a 7-year-old could have more behaviors or more needs that are similar to that of a 3-year-old because of their early deprivation. So you're having to parent that 7-year-old kind of like a 3-year-old in many ways. And for a lot of people, that's a really hard concept to understand.
All right, we're going to take a break. Have you been a foster parent? Have you adopted a child from foster care? What was your experience? Your story could help someone else. Have you considered fostering or adopting a child? What are your concerns? Have support services? What are they? How do they provide help for parents who do step up? When we come back, we're going to talk about these support services and what's available. Their number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this break.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about adoption and services that exist for parents who do adopt and who the state doesn't just leave you on your own. You don't say, here's the kid, they drive away, and you've got to figure it out on your own. There's a lot of wraparound services and consultants who can help you through making this work for you and for the child. If you've got a question or comment, call in. The number is 210-614-8980. And Linda has called in. Linda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
I'm calling to say that my husband and I adopted a child at birth. She's now 19 and a half and a student at SMU, and she's the most wonderful child. But, of course, I'm not calling in reference to that. My comment now has to do with how to broach the subject. I know that people are very frightened of adoption sometimes, and they really should be. But I think because of open adoption, parents should really consider how to tell their children from early on, if they are very young children, to explain to them that they're adopted and that they were actually wanted and they were chosen to be in that family. So I wondered if your guest might be able to talk about that and what resources are out there for them in case they need that kind of information.
All right, Linda, thank you for that great call. Kristen Berry is with us. She's the co-host of the Honestly Adoption podcast, co-author of Honestly Adoption, Answers to 101 Questions About Adoption and Foster Care. So, Kristen, what advice do you have?
So I would lean on the advice of adult adoptees. Especially, I would check out online Sherry Eldridge, Angela Tucker. Those are two adult adoptees that I value all adult adoptees' opinions, but those two in particular really have wonderful advice for parents on how to talk to your children, what they need to know. And as an adoptive parent, I have 8 children who were adopted, all different stories, all different backgrounds, including one who was adopted at birth. And we just really always lean toward honesty. We tell the whole truth, and sometimes that needs to be in an age-appropriate way. So if you are adopting from foster care and the child has experienced some trauma, don't hide that from them. They already know it. It's stored in their body. There's part of their memory that understands that. So in an age-appropriate way, we need to be sharing always the truth, no matter what.
And so, Kristen, as a child realizes, okay, I'm adopted, then where are my biological parents, and why am I no longer with them, would seem like the next logical set of questions to ask. And those can be difficult questions.
Absolutely. I think that I'm excited to see that the culture has shifted more toward open adoption, and that is within the foster care system as well.
What does that mean? I'm sorry to hit pause for a second. I don't know what open adoption means.
Open adoption just means openness. So sharing as many details as you know, that's openness. So let's say we don't have contact with a biological father, but we do know that his favorite color was blue. That's openness. We're sharing with our child, hey, here's a little piece of information that I know. Open adoption in many families can be everything from sharing Christmas and Thanksgiving together, going to the park together, having sleepovers, to just sharing letters a couple times a year or pictures. And I mean, it's 2019 right now while we're recording this. that can even just be email or text messaging, connecting over social media. So open adoption can be everything from, you know, just an open door to, you know, just having that contact information, being able to get some information for our kids.
Okay. So, and Nikki Spencer, maybe you can help me with this, care manager for with Chosen Care. To me, that scares me because, okay, I can adopt a child and hopefully, you know, I have control over this environment with the child and there's going to be a lot of challenges and stuff. But now I'm not just adopting the child, but also we're going to be having this ongoing relationship with that child's biological parents. And I mean, that can be scary as well, right? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely complex and it would very much so depend on the case. And I mean, I think for some people that may not even be an option if there's estrangement from the family or if there's safety issues like you were talking about. So it would definitely be very dependent on the individual case within the family.
Because the judge had to, like, he had to sever their parental rights, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or they decided to give up the child.
Right.
And there was a lot there. Mm-hmm. And you're going to say, well, so I want to help a child, but do I really want to get all of that hot mess in my life?
I think the most important part of it is really helping the child and being open about their story and their history and kind of what brought them here to this point in their life. Because
okay, so my motivation should be this is what's best for the child.
Absolutely, yeah, that has to be at the forefront. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the ongoing contact if that's not possible, but just having it be open of talking to the child about where they came from, talking about the biological parents, like they said, in an age-appropriate way. That's something that we really do help families with. That's a very common question that we get, whether the child is in foster care or if they've been adopted years ago, of how do I talk about this? Will it be a subject that's too difficult for the child to hear? Will it bring up trauma? And the truth is the children already, they know that they've been through something. They understand. If they don't know it, their body remembers it in different ways. The more that the parents can be comfortable in talking with it, and what we do, part of what we teach is how to talk to your child about that in a way that opens up that space to where you're showing the child, I'm not scared to talk about this. It's okay for you to talk about it. And in fact, if you have questions about it, I want you to come to me and not try and go to other people or look on the internet or something. So it's really important to have that bond be there to where they can come to you with that question and you can be the one as the parent and caregiver really opening that bridge of questions that they have. Life books are a great example of doing something like that. Life books are just going to be something where the child, you have as much information as you can get about their life and past history. And it's something that they can access and open and ask you questions if they want. But that is absolutely a very common question that we get. And we work with the families directly on each case-by-case basis of kind of how to approach that because it's a very important topic.
So now that we have technology like Ancestry.com and stuff, you're not going to be able to keep a whole lot secret anymore. I mean, you're going to find that these people know who they are.
Right, right. So that brings back the point of exactly, then you want to have it be something that as the parent or the adoptive or foster parent that you've already talked to them about. You don't want the child to just feel like they're having to go out and find it on their own. You want to be part of that journey with them so that they can be safe and protected and understand it in a way that's safe because it is invaluable. And I think by not talking to children about it and experiences just that I've had even within my own journey are just showing them that trying to get them to forget a piece of their life or their past is just showing them that they can't come to you with it. So opening it up and saying, I'm okay talking about it. Let's talk about it. You come to me.
Okay. Let's go back to the phone lines. 210-614-8980 with Carrie. Carrie, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. So I just wanted to share what my own personal experience was. Our family adopted a child. He was older. I'd been a volunteer with foster children. We adopted him out of foster care because he was older. You know, there were some challenges, lots of trauma in his background. And I just wanted to make the comment that actually our experience was that, particularly in Texas, he's still part of our family, but while we lived in Texas, we also lived in Pennsylvania since we've had him. Texas we found to be actually very, very challenging when it came to finding the appropriate resources for him. He had a lot of very challenging behaviors, a lot of self-destructive behaviors. And we found that working through post-adopt services and other agencies, we just weren't able to get him the help that he needed, the intervention that he needed before he went into before he got in legal trouble and then ended up, you know, in a facility that's not rehabilitative at all. So I make that comment hoping that somebody can hear that. Our experience was really challenging. There were many, many, many times when we came close to relinquishing rights, which would have been even more traumatic for him. We did not do that. He's 17 and a half now, so he's, you know, our forever family member. But I think there's still a lot of work to do, particularly in Texas, to help families with traumatized kids, you know, especially those that are older. He's very familiar and, you know, very top of mind, all the trauma that he experienced. We were not aware of that. It wasn't part of his records when we adopted, which is not, you know, our experience is not unique in that. So I just kind of share that comment because I actually think there's still a lot of work to be done on that front. I don't want to scare people away from adopting. It has been a rewarding experience for our family, very, very challenging, but still, you know, a worthy endeavor. And he is definitely a soul worth saving, and he's going to be a very productive member of society. But I feel like there's still a lot of work to do, particularly in Texas, on that front.
Okay, Carrie, thank you for that. And Nikki, do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I do. Absolutely. And I love what you brought up just about, I think that's another thing too, of just the challenge of finding the right services that are needed before it gets to that point of the children, because the issues are so complex and it's so different. And so that is one of the things that we offer and kind of the space that our agency came into doing those intensive in-home services that are really individual to what each family needs and helping them find the right services to kind of help bridge that gap. Because you're absolutely right. It is so complex and there's so many layers to it. And it can feel just daunting sometimes if you don't have the right people uniting with you during it.
Right. So, and you're the care manager with Chosen Care, and you provide home-based services for adoptive families. I got to take a break here, but when we come back, I want to hear a lot more about how that works. I want to ask you, Annalise, about what are the first steps that adoptive parents thinking about it, what can they do? How do you get started? How do you go through that rundown? Like, is this right for me? And the phone lines are open, 210-614-8980. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about adoption, what kind of support services exist for parents who become adoptive parents, and they want to become as good as they can be in this very, it can be a challenge. So if you got a question or comment, number is 210-614-8980. Nikki Spencer, you help parents in this area with Chosen Care, and you do home-based services for adoptive families. What does that look like?
Mm-hmm. So we'll work with adoptive families or foster families that haven't adopted yet, or even if there's relative caregivers that are caring for the children that are in, they're in the system right now, but they're placed with a relative. So that comes in. We come in and we do, we talk to all of the caregivers within the home. We get an understanding of kind of their history, how they were parented, what issues that they are seeing right now that they want change in. We help them get access to different kinds of services that they really feel the child needs. A lot of times, sometimes when you try and get services, when there's an overburden system, you've got people saying, well, here's what the child may need. But the family may see a totally different need from living with the child day to day and seeing the issues 24/7 within the home. So really helping give those parents a voice and helping them just understand the behaviors and what it looks like. It's one thing when you kind of read books or get training before the children are placed within your home and you feel pretty prepared. It's just a little bit different once they actually come and you're living it day to day, because you can just have a lot of stress and exhaustion. So we unite with the families, and it's really giving them whatever support they feel like they need. just through understanding their own histories, understanding the child's behaviors. We help them get involved with the schools. We attend school meetings. We'll go to the daycare and talk to the daycare staff. We'll even help with like sensory issues if the kids have it, to do our assessments and then help the parents implement things at home. But it's really about helping the children heal by strengthening the families, because the healthier and stronger and more knowledgeable the parents can be, the more healing you'll see for the child within the home and the more harmonious the home will be.
Anais Piera with the Children's Shelter of San Antonio. So we have a family, a parent, they want to adopt, but they don't know if this is, you know, how do they get started? How do they go through that self-assessment?
Sure. So minimal qualifications, 23 years of age and older, be able to be self-sustaining, you know, being able to choose an agency that, you know, kind of fits your needs. It could be geographically, it could be like in your neighborhood, or it could be being able to find the right supports. And being able to understand that when you are going to be opening up your home, you're opening up your heart, you're opening up your home to a child, to a young person, to sibling groups, to teenagers. Those are the ones that have the greatest needs for adoptive homes, are sibling groups and teenagers. Children with primary medical needs. I mean, the list can go on and on about the types of children with their specific needs. But having a family who would be able to open up their home, or an individual to say, I'm going to welcome this child, this young person, or these siblings into my home, and I'm going to welcome them with open arms, and I'm going to love them as if they are my own family. We can't stress that enough. I mean, to know that this child is going to be accepted, and understanding. I mean, we've done focus groups with youth who have aged out of foster care, and they've said that they wish they had somebody that was there with them every step of the way, even though they made a mistake. And we know that biological children are going to make mistakes too. I mean, and so being able to have that level of patience, that level of understanding, and knowing to grow together as a family and treat each other and accept that child and that young person, and know that they are now part of your family.
Kristen Berry, when you talk to parents who are thinking about this, is there something that you tell them? With your, you know, you're the co-author of Honestly Adoption. How do you tell them that this is in an honest way to prepare them for what can be a challenge?
Well, I was thinking about, as we were talking about adopting children who are already available for adoption. So we're talking about older children. One thing I would tell parents who are considering this is that parenting doesn't end at age 18. A lot of times there's this question, what if I adopt a teenager? What's the point? One of our daughters was 2 weeks away from her 18th birthday when she was adopted. And one of our daughters was actually 25 when she was adopted. And so, you know, I would echo the sentiment there that kids need parents. So are there difficult times? Yes. But did you have it all together by the time you were 18? Probably not. I didn't. I still needed my mom. And our kids still need their parents. So hang in there. Teenage years are tough for everybody. Adoption can be tough. It is tough because our kids have lost, you know, just the most vital connection, and that is with their family. So it's going to be tough. But hang in there. You know, I just got off the phone with my mom a little bit ago. I still need her. I'm not going to tell you how old I am. You know, I'm hanging in there. I want to chat with my mom. I want to run ideas by her too. And so think of this is a lifetime. A family is forever. And so you really can. You can get the resources you need. Things may be very difficult. So take a deep breath and keep looking, keep finding the things that you need to help your children. But also just know, you know, there are some sweet things coming. It may be when your child is 30. It may be when your child is 40. It may be, you know, participating as a grandparent. But parenting is forever.
Let me go to a caller. This is Patricia. Patricia, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you so much. My name is Patricia Martinez-Sorner. I am an adoptive parent of a 39 and 41-year-old. And I am also a professional that assists people in the contact possibilities through open adoption. And I wanted to just touch on the fear factor that was raised earlier. One of the main definitions that we do in the world of open adoption is that we are blended families, not well recognized, but we are blended families. And as such, we always, in any family, do assessment of what is possible with regard to relationships and contact. And so if we can frame it from that standpoint, I think that we have a different way of managing that makes it possible to have contact across families.
Patricia, thank you so much for that call. And Kristen Berry, is this that there are people who have this love to give, and there are children that need someone to love them, and we have to do a better job of bringing them together?
Yeah, I love the term blended family. I think that is exactly what it is. And so, you know, kind of bouncing back to that fear, when our children look in the mirror, what do they see? They see their history and they see their roots. And so when we as parents can open our hearts to a child, but also open our hearts to whatever their roots are, we are helping to build up that sense of security and self-esteem. And so that may not be, maybe a biological parent has really done something very unsafe. But then it's our job to be that bridge between, you know, that connectedness to the past. So what is it about you that's connected to your biological family in a good way? Maybe it is your incredible smile or your hilarious laugh. Yeah, so I think that we need families who will open up their hearts to find the good, even when a situation's really tough, because that good really benefits our children. They see their history, you know, when they look at themselves every day.
So Anais Bieta, give me a rundown on what's available to support me if I become an adoptive parent.
Absolutely. So, for example, the Children's Shelter has training for foster to adoptive families, and it's 82 hours, very comprehensive. 24 hours of that is related to trauma-informed care training of understanding the history of children who have come from very difficult spaces. And understanding, you know, we kind of talked about food hoarding, of being able to understand to how do we take ourselves and understand and come from the framework of the child, understanding and being patient, and showing the nurturing, the love, building the healthy attachments and relationships, understanding that you're not alone in the journey with whatever agency you have, whether it's to do in-home support services with Chosen Care, having the Hope Center at the Children's Shelter, even with your own foster care agency to be able to move you through the licensing process, but also be open to say, I have these questions, I have these quote-unquote fears, or maybe it's something that I've heard, but maybe it's a myth. What are the truths around it? And understanding that, again, you are a person, you're a human being, you're going to be having lots of questions, and being able to know that you're not alone. Again, for the Children's Shelter, being able to provide that level of 24 hours of trauma-informed care training, to be able to understand, how do you work with the child? How do you come from an understanding, to understand and mitigate those traumatic experiences for the child. And so it's not just for therapy for a child at our Hope Center, but there's also family therapy as well.
And should people, if they're thinking this might work for me, maybe try being a foster parent?
Absolutely. Well, yes, you know, being able to do that, because again, you know, when you look at adoptive parents, you know, maybe Nikki will be able to say, yeah, that was the very first time, you know, open up my door.
So Nikki, real quick. So you were, yes. How did that work?
We fostered for several years before we were able to adopt two children. So we had some kids come in and out of our home for different things. So, yes.
And that was the learning experience, provided a foundation that you're able to realize, make some judgment calls, get hard information on the ground through your own experience that brought you to where you are right now.
Definitely. And just knowing that the fear, I think, of a lot of people too, is that having a child in their home and then having a child leave, and just seeing that it's hard, but you can make it through the loss and you can still impact this child's life.
All right. Nikki Spencer is a care manager with Chosen Care. They provide home-based services for adoptive families. Also with us on the line, Kristen Berry is the co-host of the Honestly Adoption Nation podcast. And Anise Vieira is with us, the Chief Public Relations Officer with the Children's Shelter San Antonio. This is The Source. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.